Welcome to the Cloquet Vineyard. To find out more of who we are, go to cloquetvineyard.org. Thanks for listening and have a good and beautiful day.
We are in our series called Erosion. And where I want to start is talking about fantasy football. Anyone out there play fantasy football? Can I hear a hey? I'm like three of us. Okay, so anyone who's listening to recording, let it be known that there's only three of us that clearly have too much time on our hands. But I love fantasy football, and I was at the mall, and I love the mall too, totally, right? So, but this was when my son was maybe four or five, so probably 8 years ago, and I was with my buddy, Nick Hansen, and we're both holding Cole's hands, Nick's on their side, and we're walking, and my son loves sports, and when he was little, he loved talking sports, playing sports, everything sports. And my buddy Nick and I, as we're walking, we're talking about fantasy football and who are you going to draft, and what about Dante Culpepper? And I, you know, thank you for laughing. So we're walking, and my son's getting really excited, and he's looking at both of us, and he's like, "Oh, can I play football with you guys too? Is that all right?" And we're like, "Well, son, you don't understand the word fantasy, but like, there's really no actual like football game." He's like, "Oh, so well, can I just at least throw the football with you guys?" We're like, "Well, actually, there's really no even like football. There's no ball." He's like, and he just looked at me like, "Then why are you spending so much time talking about this?" Like, he just looked at me like, just absolute judgment, just 100% judgment of, "Then you are a false. You're false, Dad. All right, all these dreams and hopes I had about playing football, you have killed them, because there's no, it's, he doesn't understand fantasy." And I felt really, really stupid at that moment trying to explain to a four-year-old, "Yes, I'm a grown man, and I spend about 2 hours a week on a fake game," right? So, and to him, I was an absolute hypocrite. I was a hypocrite because of talking about football, he equated to that we're actually going to do football. And little does he know that you don't do any moving at all. And today, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about being a hypocrite. Yay! Right? Everyone's favorite topic. And I have a hard time saying this word of hypocrisy. You're going to have to struggle with me, right? Hypocrisy. So, because lucky for us, hypocrisy and spirituality kind of go hand in hand, sadly, right? But we're on our series called Erosion. Erosion's all about sin. And if you missed last week, our introduction to it, we talked about how do we frame the concept of sin, where we talked about how did you form that ethic of what sin is, of where you draw that line. I'm a big fan of the message, won't lie, right? I thought it was pretty good. But I encourage you, to get a chance to listen to it, it'll help you give more of a context of what we're talking about today. Because sin, right, if I say the word sin, you're going to think of like 30 different things, to someone yelling at you, someone holding a sign, to like suppressing feelings and ignoring it. But really what sin is anything that compromises a good and beautiful life. That's essentially what it is. The word that they use in the Bible is called shalom. And shalom is about being whole, of having peace. It's like, it's so much deeper than just peace. It'd be like jumping into a lake of peace, where every part of your body, every part of your existence is being brushed up against heaven itself. And anything that compromises that is sin. So sin is not just the Ten Commandments. Sin can be being neglectful of something, being neglectful of your body or of your mental health. It could be a whole lot of things. And the way that we talk about sin is usually with a whole lot of like finger pointing. And what we see in the life of Jesus is something very different, very different. And this is why we're talking about being a hypocrite. Because there was a study done a little while ago, and it was people who didn't identify as a Christian and didn't belong to a church, and they did a survey with them talking about, well, what do you think about Christians? Why don't you give us some feedback? And 85% of them, when they talked about, what do you think about Christians? What do you feel about them? Like, who are they? 85% of them identified them as being hypocrites. They thought, oh, to be a Christian, I hear the word hypocrite, right? More than, hey, love, way more than peace or going helping, being generous and rallying around people and being a community. They identify mostly with being a hypocrite. And it's not surprising, right? I mean, like, newsflash, there's been a lot of celebrities A lot of, we call them Christian celebrities in this weird Christian culture, this bubble, right? Call them Christian celebrities. And they've been everywhere from politicians to televangelists to pastors of mega churches that get up, like just recently, a mega church and a guy that I learned a lot from would get up and talk about leadership, how you're supposed to be humble and lead by serving and leading with love. And we're going to like transform our neighborhood through the way that we empower women and men and kids. And we're going to lead with such authenticity. And turns out that the whole, like for a long time, that he was sexually harassing and assaulting women, leaders and staff. And the way that he even led, it came out that he would lead with manipulation and fear and would plow through people so that they could have a desired result, which was a church with a $72 million budget. That's a lot of baskets getting passed around, right? And when it comes out of any person that says, hey, we're going to be like Christ, we're going to be Jesus-looking people, and we're going to love, and we're going to do all these things, and then behind the curtain you find out that there's sexual assault and harassment going over and over, and that they even tried covering it up. Then if you were like outside of the church, you'd say, oh, yeah, again. That's all they'd say. Oh, it's not surprising. It happened again. It happened again. And it happened again, and it's going to happen again. And not even taking account, the worst part is those people, those women. One woman, of course, got fired because after she got sexual harassed, got let go, and didn't even bring it up to the church because she wanted the church to keep going on. So she couldn't be honest. And with that, she struggled with depression and was home. It's sad. Like, their lives are forever changed. And if you're here and you're a victim of sexual assault, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. So there's that pain. Then there's the pain as trying to be a spiritual person, trying to be a Jesus-looking person, and I happen to be leading a spiritual community. I don't know how many times people have come up to me when politicians have said something or done something that claim to be spiritual people and then do the exact opposite. They come up. One came up to me. He's like, how do you guys keep doing it? I don't sign up for those Christian celebrities to speak for all of us, but like I didn't like vote them in for that, but they do. And people hear it, and they're very suspicious. Maybe you're here today. You're newer to spirituality. You're newer to church. You've been outside of it for a while, and you're coming back in. And you're like, I'll give it one more shot. I've talked so many of you who've said, church and me can never hang out. I don't remember who said it, but they said, man, I love God, but he can have his church back. Right? And why? Because things like hypocrisy, getting on stage, getting a small group, getting with people and say, we're going to do these things. And you find out the underbelly is just gross. It's just disgusting. So what do we do then? Because by the way, that hypocrisy can erode from a good and beautiful life. When you try putting on this face, you try impressing people, it's just going to be like a little wave that's just going to erode the culture of a community, going to erode the culture of your family, going to erode your character because you're compromising. That's sin. So what do? Do we just like try not being hypocrites? That'd be a good place to start, right? You might want to write that one. Don't be a hypocrite. But the truth is, like, we are. If the goal is just to not be a hypocrite, then we're really stuck. We really are, because regardless if it's in your spirituality, your finances, your health, right? There's no better way of exposing hypocrisy than having kids, right? Like, Dad, you said we can have phones at the table. Like, hey, be quiet, I'm on the phone at the table, right? Oh, Dad, I thought we're not supposed to eat 5 Jack's pizzas. Hey, I can't hear you. I'm too busy eating Jack's pizza, right? Like, it's just how it works. Like, especially if you're driving. Your kid's like, hey, are you supposed to be driving that fast? Like, I don't know what you're talking about. Right? So it's going to happen. So then do we just, like, walk around to people and hug them and whisper them, like, I'm not a hypocrite, I love you, right? That'd be weird. Do we just hide in the basement? Just hide in the basement. And don't interact with anyone. Get off all social media so no one can like hold you to your word or what you said, knowing you're going to screw up. Honestly. Sometimes we can react in fear. We can respond in fear. And God never invites us to respond in fear ever. You see, how you respond to being a hypocrite, how you respond to hypocrisy is authenticity. That's how you do it. You respond with love. So then, how do we do that? How do we actually do that? Like I said earlier, lucky for us, being a hypocrite's been around a long time. Actually, the word we get from is a Greek word, and it was actually a concept for actors. An actor would get up and they would, usually a man, would get up and have like multiple masks, and one actor could play many different roles because they just put on different masks, and they would pretend to be someone else. And then they'd stop and put on different masks and say, now I'm someone completely different. And it was actually celebrated. It was something that was applauded, encouraged to be a hypocrite. You could play multiple roles. Well, like for us, and a little bit different, just a little bit different. And Jesus speaks to it over and over and over again. If you want to read something, like honestly, if you've never read the Gospels or this idea of Jesus as like just some white guy in a robe walking around like, hey guys, how you doing? I'm Jesus. Let's hang out, all right? If that's how you see Jesus, there is a way broader picture of a human Jesus. And sometimes people hear the idea of like the human Jesus and they're like, whoa, whoa, no, no, no. We're floating on clouds with harps, all right? Like, we don't want the humanity of Jesus. Thank God we have the humanity of Jesus. Fully God, fully man. Because it gives people like me just a little bit of hope. Because Matthew 23 is messy. It's like Jesus just is like 1 week in onto some like diet, like the whole 30. And he's like, I need some bread. I need some bread. And then someone like disrupts him and he just flips out on them. He's like, I'm very angry, but not really. I just want some bread. That's I'm a theologian. You guys can tell. All right, I'm going to write a book. Jesus wants bread, Matthew 23. So, but honestly, I just took one little part of what Jesus, how he's talking to the Pharisees and the scribes, all right? That's who he's talking to, and he's on this rant over and over and over. In Matthew 23, verse 25 and 26, it says this, you're hopeless. Wow, thanks, Jesus. You're a great encourager, right? You're hopeless. You religion scholars and Pharisees, frauds. You burnish the surface of your cups and bowls so they sparkle in the sun while the insides are maggoty with your greed and gluttony. Stupid Pharisee. Settle down, Jesus. Get some bread, right? Scour the insides and then the gleaming surface will mean something. Okay. So what Jesus is saying is that you Pharisees, you focus so much on what people see, what they appear on the inside is, I love that word, maggoty. It's disgusting. It's gross. And maggots come because there is death and rotting, right? That's like how it works. So something has to be dead and rotting for a while in order to become, it's been there. It's not a new thing. It's been there for a long time. So let's just pause for a second. It appears, if you read through the Gospels, Jesus has a beef with the Pharisees. He doesn't like high, you don't see stories of him like high five him like, hey, way to go, Pharisees. Hi, yeah. Truth is, the Pharisees were just like one, let's say tribe, one like sect of this religion, this Jewish religion. And they had their own way of doing things. There was other ones had their own way of doing things. And people who were Pharisees were really great people. They did some amazing things. But what he highlights is in, and he picks on other people, is the people who use their religion, they use their power. They use their role to get more power. Because Pharisees, right, they were convinced that there was going to be they were going to be the big dogs. The power was going to swing back to them. They're going to, this whole idea of this Messiah would be this military God, would be this like very like, we are going to overtake the Romans and we, just like we saw with King David, we will rule. And this Pharisee thought like, if I appear to be good, if I can nail it, then I have a seat at the table of power. Is that any new today? Do we see that happening today? Because all they want is power. Hypocrisy is about holding on to the moral high ground. Why? So you have power over people who have less moral high ground. Being a hypocrite means I don't want to be exposed, so I will play this game. I will spend tons of energy of convincing you of something. Why? Because if you found out the real me, I would lose my power. Power, we can get drunk with power. And as individuals, as communities, as leaders, as Christians, we will do whatever we can to hold on to that power and compromise our values. We've seen this in elections, right? Of where we will pick one thing that we want and we'll excuse everything else because, well, at least we'll get this. We'll just compromise this. Like, so now that we have this, then what are we supposed to do? Because it's not about power. The point that Jesus brings up is never about power. Because the feeling of being in the power, the feeling of being around a circle of friends of where you have power together, where you have social status, where you can look at everyone and say, like, have you ever done this before? If you're a parent, you can stand around and be like, oh, I can't believe Chris lets his kids watch 10 minutes of TV. That's all my kids watch TV. I'm a great parent. So I can't believe he lets his kids have high fructose corn syrup. I cannot believe it, all right? Can't believe that he'd throw his phone so he can have 5 minutes to himself, to his kids, right? And they're like dogs running to meet, like, right? And I love my children. They're really great kids. But if you've been there and you judge someone else for a parenting strategy or for a health strategy of how they spend their money, and all of a sudden you're around your kids and they're like, hey, can I have screen time? Hey, I'm hungry. And you're just like, you lose it and you just throw your phone. Right? And you're like, fine, just be with God, be away, be with God away from me. God's over there, I'm over here, right? So like, and all of a sudden you will judge them for the very thing that you are now doing. And why? Because you want to appear to your friends of how great you are. Like, there's so many examples of this, and we spend so much energy. Just take a look at maybe your own life. How about this? I'll take a look at my life. Since I'm the one on stage talking, right? I can think back to times, periods in my life, my wife and I were just talking about this, when we felt like we could set up really easy boundaries, we can make things very black and white of what is right and wrong in like our relationship, what is right and wrong when it comes to sin or spirituality or whatever, in parenting, we felt really good. It was a lot easier because then I could look around and say, oh, hey, look, we're right. And if you're right, then you have boundaries. It feels so good. It really does. To be able to know who's wrong. Like, we can thrive when we have a common enemy, right? That's what fundamentalism is. It's we have us versus them. We are right, you're wrong. We're good, you're evil. We're winning, you're losing. Heaven, hell, right? It feels really good because you know you're right. But you know what happens? All of a sudden, like a little bit of grayness comes in where that boundary that was so firm all of a sudden begins to like expand a little bit. What I've noticed as I gotten older, some of the things that I've demonized, some of the things I said never, now I'm like, oh, well, why? Last week we talked about, where did I form that ethic? And it gets messy. And it gets nuanced. It becomes real life. Instead of having this, like, I'm in and you're out, what I've realized is, wow, there's this good and beautiful God who wants good and beautiful things for everyone. If that's true, and I don't put my energy on, look at me, look how great I am, moral high ground, all this stuff. If I don't put my energy towards that, but I put it in something else, then it gets even more messy. Then it gets even more complicated. So then what do? How are we as Jesus-looking people supposed to move forward? How are we supposed to respond? Because if you live in your energy of building boundaries, if you spend all your energy of what's right and wrong, it's not going to work, friends. You're just building another idol. Because at some point, the very thing that you will say, this is horrible, you should never do this, you're going to do. Now, I'm not talking like you're going to murder someone, right? But the point isn't to spend the energy on building the boundaries. Jesus says this. Oop, I got it right here. Jesus says this in John 15:13. This is my command. Love one another the way I loved you. This is the very best way to love. Put your life on the line for your friends. How do we combat hypocrisy? How can we move forward and be authentic people? It's when we love. It's when we love. The point isn't to say who's right and wrong. The point isn't at making sure everyone else knows what they're doing wrong, right? The point is this. God says, love God, love people. Love God, love people. Over and over and over and over. Love, 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 love. And when you do that, if the purpose is to love people, and the only way to love people is to the love by giving the best of yourself, to give up your life, to get low, to extend it to whoever is right in front of you, then you can be a mess. You can have mistakes. You can have faults. You really can be a hot mess, and you can still choose to love. Then it's not about all the right things I'm doing or the wrong things I'm doing. It's about I am here and I'm going to give love. I'm going to show up. And what we see in the Genesis story, what we see is when God said something is good, we talk about this all the time, but I love it. When we see something is good, it's in the space between two people that there's right, me and this piece of metal, right? That we are good because we have a right relationship with one another. And it's not good when it's compromised. It's not good when there's selfishness. There's not good when there's anger or rage or malice. What is good is when I can give love to the other. When it's me and the earth, the soil mom, between me and God and me and my friend and my neighbor and enemy. What is good when there's love between us, and that's how we flourish. And when we do that, then love doesn't have to like hold on to power, because love isn't about being right. Then love isn't about getting my way. Then love is not even about having the moral high ground. Love isn't about having all the perfect answers. Love is just about showing up. Love is then about listening. Love is just being present, friends. And what the people that I love, the people who are my mentors, the people who are my friends, the people that I emulate are, like, I have one friend that I deeply love him. He's older than me, and we disagree on lots of things. But the thing that I always know, no matter what kind of argument we have, like I love talking politics with him. I always know I'm going to get the real him. And I always know underneath all those little jokes, underneath all those like trying to get me going, I know underneath it is that there's love. And when there's love, I can be the real me as well. Then it's a safe place to be the real me. So here's just quickly, three things. Three things that you, like statements or questions or comments that you can use to how to lead with love, how you can be an authentic person, to remove the power away from the hypocrisy. Right? I'll explain a little bit. You can remove the power through three simple like statements or questions. First one is this. I'm sorry. This should be a word that comes out of your mouth always. And the word that should never come up after that is but. Am I right? It's true. Because when you say, oh, I'm sorry, but, you're going for the power again. You are grasping the power. I'm sorry, but I'm right and you're wrong. I'm sorry, but I'm faster than you, right? That'd be a weird argument, right? I'm sorry, but I'm faster. There, trumped it. So this should be coming out of our mouths always. And so often we avoid saying, I'm sorry, because imagine that, we still want the power. Follow up. The follow up is this. What else? What else? Tell me more. I love this question. I learned this from my wife, who's a coach. And she would ask me, and she's like, hey, so share with me what you're feeling. And I'd just say something, and she goes, what else? And I'm like, I don't want to share anything else. Let's just be done with it, all right? I just want to turn off my feelings for a little bit, all right? So tell me more. What a beautiful question. Because when you say, I am sorry, and people begin to share what they feel, their hurt, how they experienced you, and they share a little bit, and you take a position of curiosity, a position of listening, that's love. That's being authentic, of saying, I'm in this space with you. And when I'm with someone, especially if like I'm getting prayer with someone, and I say this often, the people that are going to be praying for you, this is not a counseling session, this is not a therapy session. I'm a big fan of counseling therapy. But up here, you're going to get very short words. They're going to listen to you. It's not advice-giving time. It's the connect and pray for you time. It is a beautiful space to be with someone when they ask you and say, tell me more what you feel. So it's, I'm sorry, and no buts. Then it's, tell me more. And the last one is this, here's where I'm stuck, or help me. Because by choosing to not be the expert, like, we all want to be the friend to show up. We all want to be the friend to be called, and we save the day. It's hard to be the friend that says, help. And the only way we're going to lead an authentic life, the only way we're going to be able to lead with love, the only way we disarm the power from being a hypocrite is when we remove that power, is when we say, it turns out I am a mess. Turns out I will make mistakes. It turns out that I do grasp for power. It turns out I am selfish. And that is called being vulnerable. Vulnerability does not happen by accident. And you cannot be an authentic person without being vulnerable. It is impossible, right? It doesn't work. You can be sincere, does not mean you're authentic. To be vulnerable, you have to practice it. And I tell you, you will sweat. Your heart will go pitter-pat, pitter-pat. And you will talk yourself out of it. Anyone else been there before? You're like, hey, this is the moment I'm gonna be really honest with my friend. I'm gonna be vulnerable and say, hey, can you help me? And then all of a sudden you're like, hey, how was lunch? I gotta go. You find a reason to get out of it because it costs you something. But I can tell you it's worth it. Use the words, I'm sorry, what else? And help me. It is a beautiful place because friends, if not here, if this is who we are, this is what the church is. The church is not some institution of power. It's not some institution just to look good. It's not just a machine. We are a bunch of broken, messed up, hot mess kind of people. And what a beautiful place to be. Because God is a big fan of the real you. And you are welcome. Wherever you are at, there's a place here for you. And you will be deeply loved. So let's stand. Let's pray. Leading with love. That has been one of my mantras recently. Is when I wake up in the morning, I'll pray, God, help me lead with love. It just changes the way I think. Instead of I want to lead with power, I want to lead to be good, I want to remove all those words and just say, no, today I lead with love. So let me pray. So Holy Spirit, will you come? And I ask God that you, even now, that you would disarm me, will you disarm us? To my friends who are listening on the podcast, will you disarm us from like grasping for that power? Like where we have built an institution, where we've built a rhythm, where we've built a character, where we've built an identity, being perfect or being the best or the brightest, the strongest. The most right. God, I pray you help us just like to move that off the table and that we can just sit with you. We can sit in love. And I ask that you will expose our hypocrisy. Help us be able to see who we really are. And that because we're flawed, because we have pain, because we have errors, because we have sin, does not mean then that you will throw us away. Does not mean then we're behind the game, that we have lost. No, but you say that we are deeply loved. And when we turn to you, will we receive from you, will you experience shalom in its fullness? And I pray for my friends who have been hurt by hypocrisy of someone else, of the church, hypocrisy of their family, or maybe even from themselves. And we'll let there be love, and let there be grace, and let there be peace, and let there be healing and health. And can we be a community, not just a great idea, something good and beautiful, not just a clever little line of God's a big fan of the real you, but God, I pray that will be who we are. We can be authentic human beings, that we really can bring heaven in every area we go. And that we can be vulnerable and authentic people. And we can help even bring freedom and permission to other people to do the same. We love you. Amen. So I'm going to invite the ministry team to make their way up. These are people who are for you. They want beautiful things for you. And like I said, they will ask your name. They'll ask you to share. What do you want Jesus to do? And then they're going to pray for you. And there's you can come up for anything. But there's two things that I specifically felt that might be of some value. First one is this, that you have a fear of authenticity or vulnerability. And the idea of even coming up and saying, I need help, just it stops you. You're like, nope, not me. Like, I'd invite you. I invite you to come up and get prayer. And say, I don't want to respond to fear anymore. The second one is this, then we're going to do some worship, is you need to let someone off the hook for how they hurt you. Maybe someone did something hypocritical. It's been a month, it's been years, or maybe it's been a decade. And anytime you think about that person and how they were a hypocrite, and it's like eaten like a little worm into your heart. And I just felt like God said that there's freedom for you if you want that. If there's anything else going on, we'd love to pray for you. We're going to worship for a little bit. Have a good and beautiful day, friends.